Welcome to Critical Aspects of Law Enforcement, a podcast where we dive into the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual well-being of the law enforcement officer.
All right, welcome back to Critical Aspects of Law Enforcement. I'm your host, Vernon Phillips, and today we've got a special guest with us. Today we've got a good friend of mine, Yitzhak. Yitzhak is from Israel. He's going to talk about just himself, his career, and the police over there, and there's also some of the things that are going on. So I'm going to turn it over to him. I'm going to let him just introduce himself, kind of give a background of his career in the police over there, what he did, and some of that. So, Yitzhak.
Thank you, Vern. Thank you for the opportunity. Hello. So my name is Yitzhak Almog. But in America, most of my friends call me Isaac, so it's okay to call me Isaac as well. I am a senior police officer who just retired 2 years ago from the Israel National Police. In Israel, we have to do the army service, which is mandatory between the ages of 18 to 21 for men, and for women, it's for 2 years only. Once you're done with the army, most of the people, they go to the university, or some of them joining the law enforcement, and so forth and so on. A lot of choices. So back in 1984, I joined the army, the Israel National Police. I started as a police officer, investigator, and because I can speak fluent Arabic, they thought I'm qualified enough to deal with counterterrorism units. So I spent a lot of years on the sec with with the counterterrorism units all over Jordan, Samaria, Jerusalem, almost all over the country. In order to understand the structure of the Israel National Police compared to the United States, we have to emphasize the word national. Because in Israel, it's one national police. If you compare it to the number of the law enforcement agencies in the United States, it's a huge difference. 18,000, that's the number, the accurate number in the United States. So we have one commissioner, but we divide the country for 7 districts. In each one of them, we have Major General who is there. Commander of the district. And under the district, we have some sub-districts and police station. So it's police station, sub-districts from up, from down to up, and then the district, and then the headquarter, which is the national one in Jerusalem, where the commissioner was staying. So through the years, like I say, it was very challenging. And let me maybe just focus on the fact, the difference between being a police officer all over is familiar. When we talk about police officers, usually we're talking about policemen that got to do with criminal activity, to find the bad guys, to collect evidence, to indict them, and to send them to jail. Drugs, burglar, thieves, rapers, so forth and so on. But in Israel, because we live in a very, very special neighborhood, I would say, the Middle East, and because Israel is a country that 20% out of the Israelis people are Arabs, what we call Israeli Arabs, and we surround with few other millions Palestinians, then one of the most important tools for a police officer is to understand how to deal with counterterrorism, basically. So during the training, we actually qualified our police officers in 2 paths. One of them is to be the classic police officer, and the second one is to be familiar with the counterterrorism. That's basically the beginning of my career. Can I go ahead and continue, Vern, or you want to ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, yeah.
Okay.
Just kind of go through some of the stuff you did in your career, yeah.
Okay. So, like I say, I started in what we call Jordan, Samaria. Jada and Samewa, this is the Palestinian cities. We got big cities like Ramallah, Hebron, and Bethlehem and other cities in the West Bank. For somebody who is not from here, it's maybe a bit difficult to understand what we call the Green Line. So Israel was established, let's go to a few facts, back in 1948. From the very first day after declaration of independence, we are in a war, okay? We've been attacked by our neighbors who thought that they should throw the Jews away from here, and this is Palestine. Through the years, between 48 to 67, Israel was, with support, of course, mainly of the United States, existing, a lot of resilience of the people. We build our army, and we have our good army, a lot of what we call ourselves startup nation, and a lot of technology goes on here. And we became quite a good, I would say, good army. So the Israel Defense Forces in 1967, it was what we call the Six-Day War. And we extend, in a way, the borders of the country. No, the original borders, what we call the Green Line. And what behind the Green Line, those are the Palestinian cities, but it's combined with a lot of Israeli settlements. Some of them are like cities, big cities already. It's more than 500,000 Israelis who live there. So we have 2 million Israeli Arabs who live within Israel. They have the same idea as myself. They can walk all the same jobs as what I'm doing. They can be a police officer. They can be everything. They don't have to do the army. This is the only difference. Mandatory is only for the Jews and for volunteers. They don't have to do this because they are the minorities. And it's very sensitive, you know, that they don't want to fight against their own brothers. But we share the same destiny. And we live at the same neighborhood. For example, I live now in the city of Haifa. And in Haifa, this is an example of how we can live and cope together all the time. A lot of Muslims, Christians, and Jews. This is the third biggest city in Israel. After Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, Haifa is coming. It's about 350,000 people who lives here. And a lot of them, like I say, is Arabs, Christians, and Jews. And we learned to live together for so many years. So actually, we live at the same building, condo to condo, say good morning, having, you know, blessing on each other, and everything is fine. But behind the green lines, those are what we call, the Palestinian would call it the occupied territories. And we would call it in a different name. I'm not a politician, so I'm just trying to explain that the difference of being police officers in Jordan and Samaria, you are much more exposed to terror activity, much more than Tel Aviv or Jerusalem, Netanya, and other cities. So basically, you have to be aware. If you speak Arabic, it's even better. And we cooperate with other security agencies like the IDF and the ISA, which is the Israeli Security Agency, known as Shabak in Hebrew. Anyway, so I did many years, and the most challenging time was, unfortunately, during the first and second Intifada. I don't know if you're familiar with these names, Vern, but Intifada in Arabic is rising up. So it's actually people, Intifada, the word in Arabic is like rising up and cleaning from yourself things. Like you want, you know, you get rid of things. So rising up and cleaning things, this is Intifada. So it starts with demonstrations, and then back at the 90s, it was a very, very difficult time in Israel because the radical Muslims from Hamas, Jihadic Islam, ISIS later on. But those days, I still remember, can you imagine, Vern, if you have 3 kids and you have to send them in buses to school? So people used to think to send one boy and 2 others in different buses, or maybe the 3 of them, just in case, God forbid, the bus will be blowing up. So they want to lose only 1 kid. This is unbelievable situation that you used to live back at the 2000. That was the second intifada, and it was led by Hamas, and most of them, and the most ugly, difficult, danger phenomenon of those days was a suicide bomber who used to come to blow themselves up on the buses, sometimes twice a day, a lot of casualties, and it's a real challenge in my job to identify them and to stop them and to prevent them to arrive to Israel before they are coming. So we had a lot of success, but it's not enough. You know, it's not 100%. This was a challenging time. So I did this for many years, and I won some station all over, and I started the Jordan Samaria district, and then I moved to be a constructor at the Senior Police Academy. They wanted me to teach the next generation for a few years, only for senior officer, not for starting, not for the basic training, for senior officers who become chief of station, chief of police station. They want me to share with them my experience, my knowledge, with different perspective and a lot of issues. And that's what I did for a year or two. And then I went back to the field, to the central, what we call the central district, which is in the center of Israel, between Tel Aviv district. It's called Central District. It's another one. And from there, I was promoted to be a colonel, and they offered me to become the head of the Juvenile Delinquency Department, and I had under my command not less than 600 people. It was a huge, huge department, and very challenging because it wasn't very nature for me to be the head of the juvenile delinquency, because I deal with juvenile, but Palestinian who used to act, to do terror, to deal with terror, not to be juvenile as the classic word of juvenile. But I found it as a very challenging job then. And I'm very proud about the fact that I was the first one to create a special unit. We call it in Hebrew Maor. Maor in Hebrew is light. And the reason I named it light is because it's the opposite of darkness, the website of the darkness, the website that got to do bad things. And believe it or no, I found that a lot of things that, I'm quite an old fashioned compared to the TikTok, what we call the TikTok generation now.
Yeah.
But it was very challenging how to protect our children in the way that, my daughter, God forbid, can talk to somebody who just to pretend himself to be Richard Gere when he was young and with a nice picture, and he is a pedophile. And God forbid, we saw a lot of things that happened, those people who make those girls to do indecent things or to strip and use your imagination. And then to threat them that if they are not coming to the mall to meet the guy, he will publish it or raise it and post it in Facebook. So here you go, the easy way to rape this girl. And it's happened a lot. A lot of shaming and bullies goes on the website. And this is, even if it's not a criminal activity, by definition, we still suffer from those bullying, And a girl in the age of 11 or 12 or a boy can come. And also we had few cases of teenager who commits suicide only because of shaming on website. So what I did, I collect all this data for almost 2 years from each hospital in Israel. I wanted to know every weekend how many teenagers arrived to the hospital because of shaming and trying to kill themselves. And the numbers were increasing from week to week all over the country. I went to London to learn from the British what the way they are dealing, and I created the unit. It was the processes to come to talk to the Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu was those days as well, and the ministers, and to convince them, because it's got to do with a huge budget, and it's 320 people. It's a huge unit in Israeli size that covering from top to the seal all the issues of the website. The main idea is to take few representatives from different ministries, like the Justice Ministry, the Health, the Health Ministry, that they got this special unit that called Suicide Prevention Unit, the police is the head, and you have to live under one roof. If it's a social problem, like it's a low economy, you know, low social economy family that got a problem, so it's going to the welfare minister. If it's got to do with health, so we have representative of health. If those are, like I had to contact the industry, what we call Google, Facebook, and others, and I found out that when we are talking about sexual abuse, they are willing to remove those stuff much easier than other that they called freedom of speech. So when I told them that one, I can click and ask using Bitcoin and ask right now, then as we talk, to see a Filipino guy raping a 4-year-old girl, you can do it very quick. It's ugly, it's mess, it sucks, but it's happened.
Yeah.
So it was, because it wasn't easy, I had to come to the parliament and you've been the Knesset and to convince them. They used to say, hey, we are democracy. What about human rights? What about privacy? I says, well, let me show you something. I took I used the Bitcoin stuff, and in 4 minutes, we were somewhere in the Filipino, and they asked me, what kind of girl do I want to see raped and what ages? They were shocked. I says, well, you have some time to do the balances between public safety, children's safety, our children, and human rights. It's always the balances. That's what I teach my officers. Those are some of them going to be maybe in the next commissioner was my student also. And I used to say the freedom of protest, the freedom of speech, and all the other freedoms are very important and essential. But never forget the main, maybe the first one. The first right is the public safety right to be safe. I mean, it's useless if you have freedom of speech, but you cannot go to do a protest because you are not safe. Somebody will throw a grenade on you, God forbid, or would stab you. So the balances between them is a very, very highly consideration thing to take before they are taking decision. And I'm very proud of some of them are still telling Isaac, what you teach us, we are doing right now. So that was my background, basically, before I had a surprise. So the new commissioner about in 2016, the world then became very small and global. You can sit here, use your fingers, and actually commit crime all over the world, you know, without moving from your arm. It's very, very easy compared to the other days that you used to have. You didn't have the technology. The technology got a lot of advantages, but also some threats coming from using for the wrong reasons. And by doing this unit, when I was later on the liaison in the United States, so I was traveling all over the country, and a lot of states presented my presentation, how we protect our childhood. I will just give an example. What we did, it was my initiative, is to create a click report. Now, if a girl or a boy sitting talking to you or to me, Vern, messengers, and all of a sudden I'm trying to do something which is not legal, like seducing her or threatening her to take her clothes off or to do something inappropriate, all she have to do is just to click. And if she is 16 and I, it's like she giving us a permission to this unit to take over and to monitor her computer with no warrant.
Okay.
But only if she have a special report. Like the only two reasons. One of them, if it's a sexual offense, or secondly, to prevent suicide from other people. Because the regular way we learned was I have to go to judge to get a warrant, and I have to go to your IP and your address, and it's take a while. If we want to prevent and to be effective, if somebody want to commit suicide, then if you can do it very quick, send people to help him instead of going to a court and get a warrant. And sometimes it takes days or hours. It's not effective. So when I'm, once again, if you are going to do the balances between human rights and human life, especially when we are talking about children's or teenagers, I do believe that the priority must be to protect them physically.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
So some of the people from, like in America, we are very similar world in a way that we have, you have Democrats and Republicans, and we have the same, we call it left and right. And the Democrats here are also always talking about human rights, always protesting against other things. And the other side, so we are stuck in the middle all the time, and the police is in the middle. So I was privileged, like after 25 years or 30, almost 30 years of service at the Israel National Police, most of them at the field, just a short time at the headquarters. And the commissioner asked me if I want to be the Israel National Police attaché in the United States of America, which is a very, very good job and very unique. You take your family, it's like doing a relocation for a few years. And I found myself and my family in Washington, D.C. And we have 16 or 17 attachés all over the world. Like you guys, you have the, you know, attachés from all the federal agencies of you got attachés all over the world. Even the in New York, the NYPD, they have police attaché in Tel Aviv as an agency. A guy by the name Charlie, great guy, good friend. So what's happened, I moved with my family. And you know, we took a house, and I was traveling all over because I was thinking to myself, how can I meet and build cooperation and good relationship with my colleagues, sheriffs, chiefs of police, marshals, and other federal agencies, DAA, FBI, and so. And so many of them. It's not one or two that I have, you know, just a meeting. I'm coming down to my own county and I meet you there. No, it's not only this. So what I did, it's in 2016, Hanukkah, the holiday of Hanukkah, was exactly at the same date of Christmas. So what I did, I opened my house and I sent an invitation like holiday reception in my house. We did some sushi and good stuff and good wines and everything. And I invited a lot of them. And here you go. That was the first step, I think, on the right direction, Vern. Not less than 80 spouses came from all over the world, most of them Americans. And then they published in Facebook and talk back saying, look at Isaac. He opened his house. He opened his heart. We took pictures together. And then I felt much more comfortable, like swimming in the pool. Later on, president of the IACP, which is the International Association of Chief of Police, I guess you are familiar with this, asked me and interviewed me. His name is Louis Dachmer. He was the chief of police of LaGrange in Atlanta, near Atlanta. He was the president in 2016 or 17, and he offered me to be the first international representative at the board of director. And ever since, I'm still there, holding the bag or the tag of board of director of the IACP. And I'm most of the time, like this year, it's going to happen in Boston in October. I'm flying all over. Last year was in San Diego. And I have a lot of friends over there, a good connection based on mutual respect. And we share a lot of things. And most of them, when they come to Israel, I'm leading them. They ask me, or some of them are even my private, you know, private guests. So basically, yep. I spent 5 years in the United States of America. It should have been 4 years, but during the pandemic of the COVID, so it was, you know, in my level, it has to be. It's not the commissioner. The commissioner is the one who give his recommendation, but it's the minister who have to sign about my appointment. So it's officially, it's not a presidential one, but it's a ministry one. Then but nobody can replace me during those days. So they asked me to stay for another year. And here you go. I found myself by my own because my family already left back to Israel. So I spent another year. I took, you know, like in a small apartment, like in a hotel, not far from the White House. And the event you know, the 2020 was the, I think 2020, when it was like curfew the other day when they went to the parliament stuff. So I found myself in a kind of curfew for a few hours in Washington, D.C. It was very interesting. And I can tell you one thing that I know by now, and I'm going probably to publish a book in the coming years. I start to work on it. Policing, it's a professional. And to be a police officer, there is this mechanism all over the world. It doesn't really matter if you are from Detroit, Michigan, New York City, or Tel Aviv. And there is like always a conflict. What is a good police officer? Is it what we call in Israeli accent, the guy who can watch and say, this is a thief ass, excuse my language? L, to be an intellectual who just graduated, college or university. And we found out, like life, that combination of both of them is the right things to do. Therefore, with my recommendation and others, part of the process of being police officers, and I want to emphasize one thing, small but important. It's when you say in Israel, police officer, officer is somebody who got grad on over his shoulders. And a policeman is like corporal, sergeant, master sergeant. This is a policeman. There is policeman, okay. Is police officer. So police officer is like being lieutenant, captain, major, you know, this is officer.
Okay.
And the rest will be policeman. So part of being a police officer, we start the process back, I think about 10 years ago or even more, is graduating your BA. And if you have a BA, you are doing the master at the university side by side while you are doing your, you know, running on the street. But still once a week, you go to the university and there is a lot of programs. So I think that the Israel National Police now are qualified enough to deal with most of the threats that we are facing. And like I say, especially now, those days, I will give you an example. Today is the end of the Ramadan. Ramadan is a holiday of the Muslims for 30 days. They're doing fast for 30 days. Are you familiar with this, right?
Yep.
So after 30 days, they're having this, like a festival. But during those 30 days, we suffered a lot from stabs. People are things that if they are doing something like sacrifice, being shaheed, it's the good time to do it during the Ramadan time. So if you want to measure the success of Jerusalem districts, so the commander of Jerusalem districts, who was my student and he's a good friend of mine, he was my cadet once, Doron his name. I hope we're going to see him. Anyway, so he called me and I says, listen, your success will be if the 30 days of Ramadan, especially at the Temple Mount near the Western Wall, when 250,000 people, Muslims, come to pray together. Some of them come and throw Molotov cocktail and stones over the Western Wall to the Jews. If you will be able to deal with this month with no casualties, you are great. And he got my bless, and here you go. They've been tolerant enough not to comment for a small teasing like a stone here or stone there, or maybe even a bottle. They look at the global picture, not only at the details, like somebody who can see every tree in the picture, but he don't see the whole forest. So he was looking at the whole forest. That was my recommendation to him. I says, Doron, look at the whole forest. Don't focus in just one or two, three, because you're going to lose the mission. And
yeah.
I just called him today and says, congratulations, my friend. And he says, I owe you a good meal. So this is about this. When you're ready, we can talk about the situation if you want to hear about what's going on in Israel right now.
Yeah. Well, there's a whole lot there that we could unpack as far as your career and just all the stuff you've done. And we could probably do another episode just focusing on your time here in the U.S. and also, you know, your time over the that juvenile department.
Yes, sir.
But just real quick. So you don't have to apologize for any stories you share or any language you use, because what this show is this is about law enforcement.
Yep.
And some of the things in law enforcement are not pleasant, right? Some of the stories that get shared are not pleasant, and sometimes the language that gets used is not politically correct. It's not, it's just, this is meant to be a real authentic, just podcast. So anything you share, anything you want, you don't have to apologize for it. Don't worry about that. And if people don't want to listen to it or they don't want to hear it, they can turn it off. That's my stance on it. But, you know, there's a whole lot there. I mean, obviously you served for a number of years. So as you kind of look back over that, what is one thing that you did to kind of help keep yourself, you know, just grounded, you know, just based in with, you know, just physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually? What did you do to kind of keep yourself, you know, just grounded in all of that?
Well, like you say, we can talk over this for 24 hours and even more. I will give you just a few examples. I had to face those scenes and to see unpleasant sights. When I was young, with a lot of hair over my head, I had a little girl and a little boy in my house, my children's, in the ages of 2, 3, 4 years old. And when I went to those scenes and I saw victims in the age of my children's, even though I did the job professionally, but later on, when I get back home, the first thing I was doing is coming to my children's beds, hugging them while they are sleeping for hour or two, sometime all night long. So this is what's kind of a therapy, like I'm protecting my children, and I guess that. Secondly, the Israel National Police found out that this is crucial to give a mental service to the forces. So in each district, we have special officers who are graduating, like being a psychiatrist or psychologist, that doing, first of all, it's became like a mandatory now. A chief of police who have a serious event in his area with a difficult site, you have to collect all the police officers before they finish the shift. Even if it was a night shift, they all stay together and doing what we call, guys, the briefing talk. We talk about this. Brief, the briefing talk. And of course, if I do believe that one of the tools, and that was a lecture that I gave to my chiefs. I had a lot of chiefs who are running now as a chief of police, that they are still using my recommendation. I'm trying to be humble. I told them a chief of police, a good one, is the one who can identify the weakness of his police troopers, not only the forces and the advantages and the quality. When you see somebody is not acting, is acting differently, more closed, not openly, taking things inside too much, you have to identify it and to make sure you are dealing with this. Mm-hmm. Take him to a therapy, take him to talk, make him talk. If he needs vacation, talk to his wife, make sure his wife and children are safe. Look what's bothering him, because when he is mentally okay, then he will be better police officer. And if he got a lot of stresses that he's not sharing with us. Now, about myself personal, what I was doing, and that's what I'm doing so far now as well, I'm taking myself or running a bit or walking a lot during the coast, going the ocean to the Mediterranean, Tel Aviv, Haifa, Jerusalem. We don't have a sea there, but there was other things to do. I'm walking a lot or running and let my mind and my blood run away, you know, and my want to think about good things. Sometimes I heard good music. And when it's necessary, when it was necessary, those days, I used to go also to do those talks with professional that we have, of course, they have a commitment or the things will be confidential. And this is like part of the things that we are having at the police every day. So this is something that is not new for us now. So physically, like I say, each one of us would like to run. So one like to swim. The other one want to go to, I don't know, maybe to see a show or to go to a good restaurant. You know, you have to break the routine this way or the other. So it's I cannot, you know, make sure that everybody loves the same thing. But we have to make sure as a chief of police to be aware and to say, hey, you go and take 3 days off, be home with your family and call me later on and then come back to the job. This is the way we treat, and it helps us, because a police officer that his chief understand his needs, he feel much more committed to this chief as well.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a mutual, like take and give, you know, give and take. That's very crucial. And this is something that I was also always used to give. I always used to say, you can't. Listen to this, Vern. It's easy. You can't make living by dying. If you think about this, it makes sense.
Yeah.
So you see your police officer is still alive, but he's dying, man. Make sure you are helping him. You are supporting him, his needs, his family, and take care of him. Especially this time when we are facing such a challenges who coming, the resilience of our people got to do with the way we are treating them as a police officers. If we are good
Absolutely.
Enough, professional enough, it's affect them. They feel more safe and they feel part of us. They keep saying, I can speak your languages. So in French, they say, union fait la force, which is unity make you strong. Like, you know, when you are all united together. So those are, so there is the physics aspect. Like I say, I walk, I go to the beach. Sometimes I play games with friends like chess. Sometimes I go to see a good movie. Sometimes I also take a weekend with my wife or without her. It used to be different time. But now what I'm doing is when I'm thinking of those things, I'm just take it easy, going to the sea, walking a few miles, having fresh air, coming. And if it's not enough, I'm going to talk to somebody professional to tell him about my thoughts, my fear. It's different now because I'm not in the same stress like I used to be. But we know for sure, the part of the tools of your commitment as the chief of police is to take care and to be aware of your police, your troops' mental needs, not only physical needs, also mental needs. That's what I used to do. I hope it's enough.
Oh man, that's great. And a lot of things you shared are right on point as far as what I'm trying to do with this show, and then also just what a lot of agencies around the US are really starting to see the need of, hey, we need to invest in our people. Especially on the aspect of that organizational support, the more support that they feel from the agency, right, the more likelihood they're going to share about some of the stuff that's bothering them or make use of the resources that are available. So, so what you share, that's, absolutely vital to just the overall individual's ability to see things, deal with things, and then, just have that resiliency to push forward. So speaking of resiliency, because I want to have time to kind of just do an overview of kind of what's going on over there right now, kind of how the Israeli police are moving forward after October 7th. Just the resilience of the police there, but also some of the things that they're having to deal with on a regular basis.
Well, unfortunately, on October 7th, the Israeli National Police became like a Marines unit, like a soldiers who defend the country. And there is a huge difference of in responsibility in the sense that from the border and outside, this is full responsibility of the IDF, which is the Israeli Defense Forces, the army. And from the borders, from the fences or the walls inside, domestically, that's the responsibility of police. October 7th, was, excuse my language, or maybe it's not excuse my language. I'm sorry, I have to use it. It's a bit dramatic. It was our second Holocaust in numbers and disaster that we face. Myself, I was in San Diego when it happened. I was at the IACP, and I couldn't believe. And I took a plane as fast as I can, and I came to volunteer. I will talk maybe later on about volunteering if we have some time about this in Israel, which is a very, very important issue. But the police officer, most of them having, a pistol with them, they carry a gun, or not shotgun all over, especially not RPG and missiles. But what can a police officer do when hundreds of thousands of Hamas a terrorist saying Allahu Akbar, shooting RPG and missiles and grenade against police officer. Well, they fight like, and they stop them as much, and they killed a lot of terrorists. They were the first responders because the army wasn't there. We screwed up, Vern, and I'm saying sorry about my language. We screwed up, intelligence wasn't good enough, and it's never happened. I think it was a bit of arrogant that we had. This is why we pay such a high price. And 61 Israeli police officers or police men and officers get killed. In the size of Israel National Police, this is a huge number. And as a chief of police, and I think you had a chance to see one of them, you had to take care of then for the funeral of police officer, take care of his family, generations. I think that the events of October 7 will affect the Israel National Police for many years, for generation to generation. It's like we are talking about the Holocaust again. But it's happened here when we have our own country, forces, air force, best technology, and this horrific events took place in our cities close to Gaza Strip. So yesterday they decided, when you are talking about what's going to happen now, first of all, there is a story, we don't have enough time for this now, about this, the police station of the ward. The combat was there, and it was demolished because the commander of the district had to take a decision what to do, because the terrorist took over there and used to fight and shooting from inside the station outside, and they had some police officer that they succeed to kill over there. And the only solution was the decision to take was to take a tank and to bomb it and to just to make it collapse. This has never happened. This is what we call now the Ground Zero of Sderot, which is a small city facing the Gaza Strip. But the police officer there were fighting to the last minute, to the last second. They gave everything. And so far, it's not the end yet. Well, they keep talking about this in the media and all over. They say that without the Israeli National Police, it could have been much worse, because people actually sacrificed their life and save others' lives. And we have a lot of stories. Some of them are really, really hero. Some of them get killed. Some of them are injured. And I can tell you that a huge budget, yesterday they published the numbers, that they are doing now through the highway who come to Sderot from the border with a lot of technology and a lot of other stuff, just thinking about this nightmare, that will never happen again. It will be not an option. Not an option.
Yeah.
So this is one of the things that they think.
And I'm going to share something here just so the people who are watching can see. So I'm going to share this and you can explain it. So, all right. Can you see it there, Yitzhak?
Yes, sir.
All right. So there you go. That's, that is your ground zero right there of that district office.
Yes. So this piece of land, it was, I will show you later on the pictures of a very nice police station, three or four floors, nice building. Nice size. And this is exactly the place where they step inside the terrorists. They took over within the police station and running, shooting from the windows outside. Nobody can arrive. And they had some police officers as hostages as well. They were, we have a lot of story over there. So the decision was made by the commander of the district. And in order to make sure that it's going to collapse on them, so it was an IDF tank not far from there that gave, three or four of those bombs and helicopter from up there with missiles, and they demolished the. So this is now a place that, in year to come, they're going to do a new police station over there. So the land is there. The memorial photo is over there. And people are coming and talking about what happened over there. It's like,
yeah.
not the ground zero size, but it's a small ground zero of Israel.
I can yes. promise you that, you know, anybody who goes over there, you know, post October 7th and gets to go around and see some of this and, you know, and hear the stories and experience, you know, what yes. really went on, it's really impactful. You know, just not only on just how much it affects the police there, but also the country and the people who live there. It's not, you know, it's just such a widespread, you know, thing. It just, it affected everybody.
Yeah. And I want you to know that when October 7 happened, so it was the first time that the Israel government took a decision. Part of the, you know, security needs is to evacuate those cities. And the city of Sderot, who got about 50,000 people or 40,000 people, have been evacuated and spread over on the hotels all over Israel. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Most of them are back now there.
Good. That's awesome.
Most of them. So when people come now, they will be able to stand to see the ground zero, but to see the resilience of the people who comes yep. and lives there. And this is the best answer that they can give the terrorists. Like, we continue with our vision, with our beliefs, and God with us. So we are there. So this is very nice to see. It's not happening on the north yet, up the north, which this is a different story. But Gaza Strip, and you know what? Used to have thousands of rockets, hundreds of rockets, 10 of rockets daily. Now, nothing. So there is still a war going on this way yeah. in different, you know, different scales. Not like it used to be at the October. But people feel more protected, and people are committed to live there. They say, okay, even if one rocket spontaneous, one of the, we can stop it 100%. But even if one rocket happened once in a while, this is our house. This is where we have to come back to live with our kids. And they are back. And it's really nice to see it, because I've been yeah. a few times to see how the markets goes. People goes to the supermarkets. They open the schools again and back on life. And this is cannot happen with resilience of people. Yeah. And in order to make resilience, I do recommend it about two things. One of them is to make people to be aware about threats, and secondly is to drill them and to do it with cooperating with them. When you go to a community or any neighborhood and you take few people who are the leaders of the community and they are part of your team as a policeman, as a police officer, so they feel part of the family and they will do the right things and the right steps, and this is where the way they affect, you know, they have a lot of influence about their people, and the outcome is that people feel safe, people feel better. And if something happened, they do the right steps and they save life. I saw it. So yep. a huge budget now coming on just to make people to feel even safer, a huge budget of money. And we're going to have a community special unit of people who qualified the army, they are civilian now. They will be with rifle and they will be in a command center, observing 24/7 the threats who are coming, that something like happened will never happen. So yeah. main idea is to block those terrorists far from the city. A lot of obstacles that we are going to put on roads and other technology that will stop them before they arrive to the city. This is something that we never thought will happen. But once it happened, it's better to take the lesson and to prevent the next time.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. So we could, you know, I could give you, you know, hours to talk about, you know, what happened and just kind of the aftermath of that. But I want to be respectful of your time. And but as we kind of wrap up, the last question I have for you is just how much has your faith played into where you're at now? Just your being able to work through all of your career, to walk through everything that's been going on the last 6-7 months. You know, how much has your faith played a factor in that?
Well, this is not a simple question.
It's not a simple question, right? No.
It's not a simple question. Well, without faith, you can't really do anything. I do believe, you know, so it's a combination of things. And I would say in general that faith helps a lot, and believe on your principles, following the truth, teaching the next generation, and always be a personal example to the other. I think you say example or exemplation. Yeah. Those are the function that you can build and construct the building on. We used to say, that's what I teach my cadets. I'm trying to say it exactly. Maybe in English it will be a bit difficult, but I will do my best. One of them is that the result is determined. The process is important. Mm. So you want to achieve something. This is your destiny. This is your goal. What about the process? If you do the process right, and the process, it's a big word with a lot of elements inside. You understand?
Yep.
A lot of elements inside. And the other two phrases that come with this. So first of all, the result is determined. The process is right. Show me a right and make it better. Show me a right is show me if you need to correct. So what's happening if I give my police officers a mission to do? So this is the mission. The result is determined. Show me the process that you are doing. Give some time for correction if it's necessary. And by the end, because I'm the big boss, show me I white. So those are the four elements that if you think about them, each one of them and all of them together make kind of, I would say not a theory, but strategically, the right things to do. And I just want to say one thing that's very important. I can talk about this also 24/7. When I was in the United States, I was blessed and privileged to meet so many close friends. Commissioner, U.S. Marshal, Chief of Police, sergeants, private, and officers all over. In 50 countries, 50 states, at the ICP and outside, in Florida, in Boston, in New York, and on the West Coast, all over. We used to do together the best practicing. So we took an issue that bothers not only the Israel National Police, but also other agencies all over the world, especially democracies. And we deal together, and believe or not, we teach one each other things. This is priceless, Bern. This is priceless. You can, some of them are professional, like using the right, how to shoot. And some of them is to discuss what is the best act to do in order to prevent a phenomenon which is not affecting all our society.
Yeah.
That's it.
No, I appreciate it. I appreciate, you taking the time to come on here and just talk about, your career, talk about the Israeli police, talk about, some of the stuff that happened there on October 7th. Just, it's been a great opportunity to be able to just have a conversation with you. And I look forward to having more conversations in the future. I think there's a lot of things we can kind of, splinter off from here and get into moving forward. But I want to thank you for your time and you jumping on here. We'll be seeing each other soon.
Yes, thank you for your time. Thank you for the opportunity. Looking forward, guys, to see you. And I will be honored to do another podcast later on in the future to talk about other issues if you will find it interesting. So thank you for listening, and thank you so much.
All right. Well, thanks, Isaac.
I appreciate you tuning in and listening to Critical Aspects of Law Enforcement. Remember to subscribe to the podcast and share this resource with your fellow officers. The goal of Critical Aspects is to serve, support, and sustain the law enforcement professionals. So head over to www.criticalaspects.org for more resources and information. And as always, God bless and be safe.